Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Here at the show, we're putting together a playlist of the funniest songs ever. Now, I believe I know what the funniest song ever made was, but the rest of the Soundcheck crew has threatened to quit if I play it on the air. Bunch of babies. So we need to look elsewhere. Fortunately, we've got comedian Eugene Merman coming in to get our list started, but I need your help too. So tell me what you think is the funniest song ever. Could be intentionally funny, or it could be a song meant to be taken seriously that you just think is accidentally hilarious. You can leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612 or a comment at soundcheck.org. That's 866-939-1612 or soundcheck.org. Earlier this summer, Jenny Lewis stopped by our studio. The actress and former lead singer of the popular band Rilo Kiley has had a big success with her new album, The Voyager, which was produced by fellow singer and songwriter Ryan Adams.
We had hung out a couple of times, a couple late night jams at my house where he, you know, sang songs about cats and aliens. And I heard that he had opened this analog studio on the Sunset Strip. And I was desperate to find a spirit guide, really. And so I reached out to him, and he said, yeah, come on down.
Well, Ryan Adams is here today with his band. And while I can't guarantee spirit guides or aliens, I do fully expect that we'll be headed into some weird territory when we get to talking to Ryan later. For the moment, though, let's hear him playing. This is Ryan Adams and his band with his song Stay With Me, live on Soundcheck.
All right, stay with me.
That's Ryan Adams with a new song called Stay With Me. We'll hear more from him and the band later on in the show. Here on the program, we are on a mission to build the funniest playlist of all time, and we need your help. We want you to tell us about the songs you think are the funniest ever. You can call us up at 866-939-1612. That's 866-939-1612, and tell us about the songs that you would add to our list, and if you'd like to sing us your song, so much the better. You can also submit your song at soundcheck.org. Now, to help get us started, comedian Eugene Mirman is here with us today, back in the Soundcheck studio. Good to see you,
Good
Eugene.
To see you. Good to be back.
So, funny is what you do for a living.
Yeah.
So, do songs have to cross a pretty high threshold to meet your standards?
Well, that's the thing. I think, like, what's, you know, the way that stand-up is funny is not necessarily the way music is funny. So to me, a lot of musicians and artists are really funny, but it's almost more like wry or the whole sort of concept of it than, like, you know, picking songs that are like, here's a really funny song by, you know, a band that, like, Flight of the Conchords or something. Like,
right.
those are very funny songs, you know, but I think that what I kind of, when I think of it, I sort of, like, for instance, there's the Toby Keith song, the Taliban song. That to me is maybe, that might be the funniest song that I can think of in general across.
Why?
All.
What makes it funny?
It is, first of all, it sounds a little like the Eagles. It is a passionate, inaccurate telling of politics and what happened in a weird, in a way that he means well. It's like everything is great, like the whole thing. Like it comes from, I'm sure he wrote it from a good place. It is so perfectly misguided and weird and then also like pretty harmonies. It's just, you know, you couldn't do a better, funnier thing.
Well, let's hear a little bit of Toby Keith's The Taliban Song.
I'm just a middle-aged, Middle Eastern camel herding man. I got a little two-bedroom cave here in North Afghanistan. Things used to be real nice and they got out of hand since they moved in. They call themselves the Taliban.
Ooh, yeah, the Taliban.
Singing, ooh, the Taliban, baby.
Oh, yeah. Now I ain't seen my wife's face since they came here. They make her wear a scarf over her head that covers her from ear to ear. She loves the desert and the hot white sand, but man, she just like me. No, she can't stand the Taliban.
Ooh, the Taliban, baby. But you know someday soon we're both gonna saddle up and it'll be ride camel ride. My old lady, she
yeah.
be.
Yeah,
the Taliban song.
Taliban, baby.
From Toby Keith's record, Shock and Y'all,
yeah.
which also includes the classic, If I Was Jesus.
Yes, there's a lot of great songs. But that song is kind of, it's just so perfect in so many crazy ways.
You said in the build-up to that clip, you couldn't do a better funny song, and I thought you were then going to add, if you tried. Was he trying? Was he trying to be funny here?
Oh, that's true. It did not occur to me. No, I think there's too much in it that, like, I think he's like, no, it's a person who loves the hot white sand, and now she has to wear the stuff. Like, it's just like, I don't think he was trying. It would be ironic beyond imagination if it was, like, purposefully misunderstanding other cultures the, like, what happened. I mean, it would be amazing, and someone could do that, and maybe he would do that upon further reflection, but I don't think that song at that time was that.
So we're talking with Eugene Mirman, the comedian, about songs that he would add to our funniest songs of all time playlist. Tell us what you think are the funniest songs of all time. Leave a comment at soundcheck.org, tweet at us, or call us up at 866-939-1612, 866-939-1612. The Eugene Mirman Comedy Festival is taking place this month, September 18th through 22nd, at Union Hall and the Bell House, both in Brooklyn. So I guess, Eugene, intention is an interesting thing to talk about. Whether a song, you know, Steve Martin does King Tut, clearly meant to be funny.
Now if I know they line up just to see him, I'd take an all my money and bought me a museum.
King Tut.
Buried with a donkey. He's my favorite honky.
Born in Arizona, who lived in Babylonia, King Tut.
Right, right. And yes, clearly meant to be funny and clearly a funny song. I guess I, as a result, I think... there was maybe one or two songs I included that are, I think, intended to be funny, but you know, on this list. But mostly, yeah, I think that to me also what makes something funny, like there's a lot of artists that I think are very funny, and I don't know that I would necessarily say like this is a hysterical song, but I think they, like Jonathan Richman has a ton of wry, funny songs, from his song about the Velvet Underground to, you know, Vampire Girl to Government Center to just a lot of stuff that I think is... It's also sort of sweet and earnest and therefore, I think, funny. I think because it's not funny the way the Taliban song is, but meaning like intentionally, sweetly, earnestly funny.
Almost naive. I mean, this is a guy who wrote a song about an ice cream truck, you know, Ice Cream Man.
And... Yeah. And I think that there – so in general, to me, a lot of stuff that I think is funny is either a song that describes something sad in a really earnest way or something sweet in a very earnest way, but it has it's somewhat akin to what I like in some of the sort of best stand-up.
So with Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers, Government Center...
I think it's just lovely to write a song about wanting to cheer up secretaries at Government Center and describing what you sort of what they do, or I don't know. I think it's just kind of... There's like a sweet loveliness to it.
All right, Soundcheck listeners, see what you make of this song from Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers.
Well, we got a lot of hard work today. We got a rock at the Government Center. I'll make the secretaries feel better when they put the stamps on the ledgers. And they got a lot of great desks and chairs at the Government Center. We gotta make the secretaries feel better when they put the stamps on all those letters. We gotta rock the rockin' non-stop tonight at the Government Center. Make the secretaries feel better when they put the stamps on the ledgers.
They have really great desks and chairs. I mean, that's...
I guess, Eugene, one part of what makes it funny is it's a great song. You know, it's clearly meant as a good song.
Yes.
And yet, it's like you're trying to figure out, does he really mean this?
I think he probably kind of does. I think he wants to cheer up the people. I mean, for all I know, he had to play Government Center in Boston. Meaning it's like a specific place. It's where the mayor's office is.
Mm-hmm. It just seems to be about bureaucracy and bureaucrats anywhere, you know, stuck in their cubicles. And...
Yes. And cheering them up. But I also, you know, I think because he has so many songs that are specific to Boston and Massachusetts, I do like to sort of think like he had a day where he was playing in a very specific location and he really wanted to cheer up these people and they have really good desks and chairs.
Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers with Government Center. The comedian Eugene Merman's with us here in the Soundcheck studio today talking about songs that he would put on a playlist of the funniest of all time. And so to come back to the idea of the intention, whether the song is meant to be funny, you said that you did pick one for us today.
Or one or two, and this might be it. There's the band The Frogs that put out, I don't know, maybe a few CDs. I had one in college that was just all really weird, sort of very funny songs.
Intended to be funny.
You know, actually, they're so odd, it's hard to say, but I think some of it is definitely intended to be funny. Like, meaning, where's Jerry Lewis? And then there's also I'm sad. Because the goat just died, or I'm sad the goat just died today.
Yeah.
Both are really funny.
I do not know this song. I can't wait to hear this.
I will say that I once saw them. I did a show in Columbia, Missouri, and then I went to see them play afterwards. This is maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago. And And not everybody there was there to see them. And I saw, and I've never seen this before, but basically the guy from the band came out. He had angel wings on. He walked through the crowd. He got on stage. It's a small place, like, you know, 100, 150 people. And then he proceeded to play the same song five times in a row until everyone who wasn't there to see them left. It was amazing. I mean, it was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. Because also, like...
Was it funny?
I mean, in the song was, once you hear it, you'll get that it was very funny to me. I think that whoever liked them, and whoever didn't was just like either unnerved or upset or just, I mean, they're an odd bunch, but it is really funny. I've seen them a few times live.
Well, isn't that the definition of comedy, of humor? It's like the people who get it love it, and the people who don't get it.
Yes, but I wouldn't purport to personally put intent on them. Meaning, like, if you listen to enough of the stuff, you're like, yeah, I don't know what the intent necessarily is. But I will say that I think these songs are meant to be funny and are very funny.
All right. This one is called "I'm Sad the Goat Just Died Today" from The Frogs.
I'm sad because my goat just died today. I'm sad, my goat just fell in the hay. Hey, we're all sad, the goat just died today. Oh, 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 we're sad enough to cry. Hi, 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 I'm sad, the goat just died tonight. We're sad, his funeral though will be out of sight. We're so sad, but in a way we're happy he didn't suffer too much. He only got the cramps once. Sad.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put that on the playlist.
Yeah, exactly.
The Frogs. I'm sad the goat just died today.
Yeah.
The singer sounds like he's got a foot in the grave himself.
Yeah.
Young guy?
You know, I don't know exactly. I mean, this came out in the mid-90s. I think mid-90s. And I think at the time they must have been in their 30s or 40s. So I don't really know.
Wow.
Exactly.
All right. Eugene Merman, the comedian, is with us today talking about our playlist of the funniest songs of all time. The Eugene Merman Comedy Festival is taking place September 18th through 22nd at Union Hall and the Bell House, both in Brooklyn. And I see there's a Gowanus Idol competition.
The people who do Talent Show, which is an incredibly fun variety show that has different themes each time, are putting on this talent show. And it's going to have Bridget Everett, who's incredible, Amber Tamblyn, Ira Glass is going to be a judge, me, a lot of people. It'll be really fun.
And will this be a singing competition?
It will be, yes. It will be I don't know how much competition there will be, but it'll be a day of singing and
hilarity.
Judging. And hilarity, yes. There will be a lot of singing, yes.
So, you know, sometimes, I mean, this is, and it sort of comes back to the intentionality question we were talking about before. You must know Florence Foster Jenkins.
I must, though I might not.
Oh, my God. Well, then I have to play this for you.
Okay.
Florence Foster Jenkins was a socialite in the middle of the 20th century who fancied herself an opera singer.
Oh.
So it was sort of a William Hung kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Remember the
when she tries to sing the famous Queen of the Night aria by Mozart, it is unrecognizably hilarious. Listen to this.
Wow.
Are you impressed?
You know, it's funny. When you first were going to play it, I was like, you know, in my head, I was like, I don't really know opera. Like, I don't know if I'll be able to judge it and, like, know whether something is good or bad. And then you hear it and you're like, oh, no, I can. It's very, yes.
I was kind of wishing for a moment there that we were on TV because your expression when she tried to hit that first high note was pretty priceless.
Yes, it definitely was like if you were like, I'm just kidding, that was someone pulling a cat. I'd be like, oh, yeah, no, now it makes sense. That was just different cats being pulled different amounts.
All right, well, so let's go back to your list, though. Tell me who or what is Swamp Dog?
Swamp Dog, I discovered actually through Wesley Stace, John Wesley Harding. He played me a Beatles cover that he did, and I was like, oh, this is great. And then I went and just got a ton of his stuff. He is, he's like a 60s, 70s R&B sort of country-ish singer. He has a lot of really, really funny, really just wry songs, and also that are just, you know, beautifully sung and performed and just sort of wonderful. I love Swamp Dog. I think he actually lives in New York currently. I've never seen him live, but I've always wanted to. And this is a song called Wife Sitter, which is basically like a babysitter except for a wife sitter. So the idea is that when you're away, maybe having an affair, he's at your house watching your family and having sex with your wife. Which is just such a funny, odd song to have written. And then it's like, yep, no. And then you listen to it and you're like, yep, that's exactly. He is wife sitting for you.
Is that you?
If we weren't doing a segment on funny songs, I would have just taken that if I weren't listening carefully to the words. What a great piece early 70s R&B.
Yeah, no, it's excellent. He is excellent. And it's, yeah, I mean, and partially it's funny, but it's also just a great, great song. And in general, he has a lot of songs that you're like, this is, you know, pretty funny, but it's also just an excellent, excellent song.
The record's called Gag-A-Maggot. From 1973 by Swamp Dog, and we heard a little bit of Wife Sitter. We've been talking about funny songs with Eugene Merman, the comedian, the voice of Gene on the animated series Bob's Burgers, frequent guest on Neil deGrasse Tyson's series Star Talk Radio. He's been with us here on Soundcheck today. The Comedy Festival is September 18th through the 22nd at Union Hall and the Bell House in Brooklyn. And Eugene, this has been, needless to say, a lot of fun. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It was really fun.
A good start to our Funniest Songs Ever playlist.
I'm a home record, that's what I am. I ain't even got no wife for you to sit with. Why should I get a wife? I don't need one. Long as you got one, I use yours.
Up next, more from singer-songwriter Ryan Adams, who recently released a self-titled album and a hardcore punk EP called 1984. Ryan and his band will play songs from both of those projects here in the studio, including two that have never before been played on the radio. That's coming up next on Soundcheck.
I'm tired of giving up so easy. Tired of giving up at all. Tired of giving up so easy. Tired of giving up at all.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 3 years between records, it's about what you might expect from most musicians, but for an artist as prolific as Ryan Adams, that amount of time seems like an eternity. Well, the wait is over. Ryan Adams' self-titled album is out now, and he has brought his band into the Soundcheck studio to play some of it live. With the song Gimme Something Good, here's Ryan Adams live on Soundcheck.
Gimme
My mind is so blank. So going for a walk. I got nothing left to say. I can't see. There's darkness on the rise. I'll be waiting here till the end of time. All my life been shaking, wanting something, holding everything I had like it was broken. Give me something good, give me something good, give me something, give me something good, give me something good, give me something good. I was playing dead, didn't make a sound. Holding my breath, going underground. So I can't talk. I got nothing left to say. It's like there's no tomorrow.
That is Ryan Adams and his band live on Soundcheck with the song Gimme Something Good, which appears on the new Ryan Adams album, which is otherwise untitled, or self-titled, I guess we could say. Ryan singing and playing guitar, Mike Viola on guitar, Charlie Stavish on bass, Freddie Bockenheiser behind our drum kit, and Daniel Clark behind the keyboard. And Ryan Adams and the band performing some songs for us live here in the studio today. Ryan, nice to have you back on Soundcheck.
Nice to be here.
Nice video for that song, Give Me Something Good, starring Elvira, Mistress of the Dark.
I know, right? Elvira, who would think?
And then there's like a promotional video for the whole record that stars like Gary Shandling and Don Was,
yes,
channeling his inner creepy
Jeff Garlin,
right?
Bob Mould.
Bob Mould. Now, we do this pretty much every day here on Soundcheck. Today, it's you, Ryan Adams. On our previous program, it was, in fact, Bob Mould.
Oh, that's so cool, because we were just hanging with Bob last night.
Well, and when Bob heard that you were going to be our next guest, he left a little message for you.
He told me that, okay.
Now, the message is, I mean, that's Bob's set list from what he played here in the studio, followed by, Yo, Grandpa, why would a man who's a little more veteran, let's say, than you, what's the grandpa business?
Grandpa is like a code word.
Yeah.
but I cannot reveal the code because I'm sworn to secrecy.
Okay.
Because I, right. Yeah, it's like it's sort of, you know, it's like a metaphysical way of saying hello.
Okay, if you say so. A strange hello from Bob Mould, former frontman of Sugar, and before that the band Husker Du. And he is in this video kind of promotional thing for the new Ryan Adams record. He did tell me to ask you about the donut run. Apparently an early morning donut run. He said, ask him about the donuts and then you'll find out whether he's really talking or not. Do you have any idea what Bob Mould is talking about?
The donut run.
He's talking in metaphors.
The donut run. Well, I mean, I run pretty much every morning that I can, which is pretty good. And then also,
I got the impression this was like still dark morning, like 2 a.m. sort of thing.
Oh, okay. I know what he's talking about. Okay, so check this out. This is a pretty interesting thing to talk about on the radio. So the studio that where we all hang out in Los Angeles, my studio, which is like a private studio, is right across the street from maybe what I thought was the world's most psychedelic 7-Eleven. It really is pretty interesting because in this very place, you'll get, at any time of night, you'll get, you know, some punkers. You'll get the remnants or the new generation of hair metal people. It's hard to tell. But usually, like, the older generation are weirdly aging to where they look like witches. I'm being serious. It's an L.A. thing. Like, they're becoming witches, which is pretty interesting. And then you get, like, all kinds of different people. There'll be, like, some celebrities go in there. It's this huge amalgamation of people. And so while we're recording in the studio, there'll be a certain point in the evening where we have to make the donut run. And mainly, they make 7-Eleven brand donuts, the small kind of compact donuts that they're size of like one of those 25-cent toy rings or something. They're basically the worst thing that was ever made, and they're so good after midnight. It's like sort of a reverse Goonies thing.
So it's like
a reverse Gremlins thing, rather.
Uh-huh. So it's like a White Castle run. Do you have White Castle out in L.A.?
No, but there are castles, but there are different colors. Okay. They're usually stucco.
Yeah.
So the other day we were in Washington, D.C., and we stopped by Discord Records house, the famous Discord Records house.
Minor Threat and
absolutely
bands like that.
Fugazi. Yeah. Fugazi. I mean, the list goes on how important Washington, D.C. was for music,
right.
The D.C. scene and Discord. So we go to the Discord house, which really served as like this rehearsal place for Fugazi and Minor Threat. And actually most, I would say probably the list of 40% of the Discord bands rehearsed in the basement. This basement that had a really low ceiling, which is why if you ever see pictures of Guy Picotto from Fugazi and he stands with that huge wide leg stance, that's all about
not hitting the ceiling?
That's not hitting the ceiling. And so as it turns out, we go to visit. It's exactly across the street from a 7-Eleven. Unbelievable.
Just as if the cosmos, the universe turned to put you across the street from
7-Eleven,
another 7-Eleven.
It really is a freak magnet. It really does have the power to attract the most sort of profound personalities, I think.
Ryan Adams is with us on Soundcheck. Now, I did want to ask you about the studio because Jenny Lewis was here in the studio not too long ago and talked about working with you in the studio, which is called Paxam, right?
Yes, sir.
And I know that, is it Fallout Boy and
yes.
and somebody else, maybe Willie Nelson?
Well, no, I produced a Willie Nelson record a long time ago, or I did my best, but the... But that was here.
Right, okay.
So far, we've had Ethan Johns, who did his last record, Butch Walker's new record, my record.
Yeah. So tell us about the studio. I mean, it's like a super analog kind of place, right?
So basically what happened was, when I moved to Los Angeles, I spent a couple of years just sort of hanging around and finding my way around and going to Sunset Sound Studios and making some music. But eventually, because having lived here for so long, you actually have to sort of get used to space.
It
really is very true. You sort of go like, wow, there's all this space. Like, what do I do? And
whereas in New York, a 500-square-foot apartment makes you think, wow, look at all the room I suddenly
have.
You're
like, I score.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I found this old place that was at Sunset Sound, and I sort of decided, you know what, I'm going to I'm going to do it. I'm going to build out my own studio. I'm going to stop just home recording or always frequenting these other studios and really give it a shot. And it took a while. But the interesting thing was is I guess I sort of unconsciously knew that it was going to happen because I had been amassing all this analog gear. Mm-hmm. And I was actually on the Ashes and Fire tour. I would go to each city and say, do you know where an old electronics store is? I didn't want to specifically find people that had gear. I wanted to find the stuff that was beyond even them. And what strangely happened was, is by the time I got to Baltimore, I found the holy grail of holy grails. I found a Bill Putnam Consolette UA-610A mini console. and then I found a box, which was the Blackface 610s. UAs, which are basically, this thing weighs like 200 pounds, and it's the mic pre's that Neil Young uses for all his records, with that huge, crazy tube sound. And you know, as soon as I found that, I went, "It's on! I'm gonna build it out. I'm gonna make it happen."
So you built the studio around the gear that you had amassed.
Absolutely. And what's cool is it's not in a conventional studio; it's in basically a house.
Yeah,
it's very Motown. It's sort of like our control room is in a living room. The vocal ISO booth, which is right next door, would have been the dining room. There's a hallway, which some stuff sounds good in. The bathroom has a great corner that the bass sounds good in, so we built a sort of thing in the corner for it. And then I took out some walls that would have been conjoining bedrooms in the upstairs, and now they're this long railroad sort of live room. And then we left the last room that sort of faces out to Sunset Boulevard. We just turned it into a room that I thought studios always need, but I've rarely seen, which is a room full of records, stationery, manual typewriters, a really good turntable, and some peace and quiet, and with the guitars in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And what's crazy is that room has really been used more than anything else.
So a place where in the hurly-burly of production, you can actually go and clear your head for a minute.
Yeah, I've always...
Or just play.
Yeah, because studios are usually very sterile so that the band can bring in all the gear, they can record their stuff, and they can leave. But I've always been sort of shocked when you go to studios and go like, well, we make records in studios, you know, and we like are supposed to be inspired when mm-hmm. you're there. And you might finish the song there, but very often, in my experience, when you go to a studio and say, do you have a thesaurus? Or they don't have one. They don't have reference books. So I built a wall of all the books I've ever used to reference when I was writing, and the guitars right on the wall, stationary drums that sound already good. A band could just breeze right in and bring nothing, and they could, it's all there for them. It's already set up.
Well, now, folks, again, Ryan Adams, my guest on Soundcheck, here with the band. People listening closely enough to what you're saying will notice a thread, the analog gear, the manual typewriters, the books, rather than, Wikipedia and Google. You have stuff, right? You have digital stuff. You presumably,
yes.
you know, have made your peace with the fact that most people will listen to your music via digital files. So, you're not a Luddite, is what I'm saying, but you do seem to have this kind of passion for the previous generation's technology.
I think I sort of distrust the idea that there are people who are sort of anti-technology in an age of technology. I distrust that as much as I distrust using all this new technology to do things that have been done for a long time in a really profound way. I can explain it very easily. Even if people don't like the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies, they don't like them, or even if people maybe watched Star Wars or Empire Strikes Back, the very first print,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't impress them in any way, there is something about the fact that those films were shot on film. There was light and shadow accidents because of built sets. There were model makers. There were real craftsmen whose only purpose in life, their passion, their calling was to build a Millennium Falcon model, and then another guy's passion, because maybe he watched Citizen Kane, was he loved shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And they created these masterpieces. And then they went also onto this film. And this film, its only real purpose was to make a movie. So for me, because so much went into that, I think to myself, because they make a Studer A800 2-inch 24-track tape machine whose only purpose is to receive signals from a microphone that go through a mic pre. It's its only purpose in the world. I trust that. And I can feel, this sounds melodramatic, but I feel like I am experiencing the soul of the person who not only designed it, but the person who made it, specifically when it works. But there is a new thing, which is there is this tendency for people to trust that your computer, this thing that you use to go on eBay, or the thing that you use to email with your parents or go on Facebook or whatever, that somehow it also can be your recording studio. And it's an emulator. That little computer is that small because it really is a very, very significant thinking machine who has enough zeros and ones in it, which actually just represent yes and no's to the computer's brain, to take an impression of anything you do. So it's not your voice. It's not the sound of the guitar. It's not the sound of the drums. It's not actually what happened in the room. It just took an impression, and it did its best to give it back to you. But if you record onto magnetic tape, you're using magnets. You're using a tube microphone. You're actually capturing what really happened. And although if I want to watch Manhattan by Woody Allen, I can watch it on iTunes. I can buy it and watch it on my computer. But I can see the film stock. Yeah, I can see the shadows. And I can feel those real edits. And I think if you're in a room and you're doing something and the specific idea is that you're focusing on what's happening in the room, I would trust people who are looking at each other in a room with this machine in the corner that's capturing it far more than something where you're all playing and then everybody goes down to this one room and they stare at a screen and they look at a sound wave. And the first option of any computer, I'm not speaking against computers because I think that they're wonderful and they make a lot of sense, but for creative purposes, a computer is a digital mirror. And the first option in any creative program that I've ever seen that Apple has ever made is to edit. You take a photograph. The first thing it asks you that if you want to do is, do you want to change the light and shadow? Do you want to highlight something? Do you want to, you know, turn it into black and white? Well, in a recording, all the recording technologies, to me, the very first thing that I see is your availability to manipulate the actual moment. My feeling is we're these spirits living in these human being bodies, and we are so perfectly aired. But some of those errors are so wonderful. Mm. Somebody played the blues too fast once on an electric guitar, and they invented rock and roll. And it's because that they were probably on cocaine. But you know what? Like, we got Chuck Berry and Little Richard, and I want to hear that. I want to hear human beings doing human being things, you know?
So on this album, on the self-titled Ryan Adams record, do you hear the results of that process of you not having a screen asking you if you want to edit first time out?
Absolutely. And I mean, if we wanted to change something, Charlie had to get a razor blade and cut tape. Or I had to look at him and say, let's just put a bunch of reverb on that, because that's what they did on Black Sabbath Volume 4. If you listen to Wheels of Confusion, I think Black Sabbath Volume 4 is like this amazing example of this. That record to me is this unknown Black Sabbath masterpiece. And in the very first song, there gets to be a part at the end of Wheels of Confusion where it's supposed to basically crescendo before that amazing coda. And I'm pretty sure that Bill Ward totally lost his mind.
And his place in the song?
And his place in the song. And for some reason, Geezer Butler was able to hold it together. I think, you can't tell, but I think he starts to play like some jazz 16th measure. And what's amazing is, in that part of the song, somebody went to them and said, the rest of the take is so good, so I have this amazing idea. Tony, go get your SG. And let's have you do two really huge guitar, like bar chords, and then this solo part, and then Ozzy's voice comes in probably like three times louder than the rest of the record, which is amazing. Because if you ever listen to it, you know, if you're a person that, I don't know, like if you're a person that has like, you know, an affinity for the green stuff, and you listen to that, like your ears will start smoking, because it's three Ozzy's, four Tony Iommi's, and just somewhere in the background you hear this, that's the drums, because they couldn't print it. And as soon as that section is over, it's bat. They're back.
They're
in.
Back. Yeah.
And I listen to that and I go, that's what I want. That's the kind of music that I want to listen to.
Black Sabbath's Wheel of Confusion. Up next, Ryan Adams talks about revisiting old material and dealing with an inner ear disorder called Meniere's disease. Plus, he'll play us two songs that have never before been heard on the radio from his recent hardcore EP called 1984. All of that coming up next here on Soundcheck.
Standing in the cold gray dawn, watching
this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I'm here in the studio today with Ryan Adams, the singer-songwriter who recently released his 14th studio album, as well as a hardcore EP called 1984. So, Ryan, you've been doing this for a long time, and along the way there have been songs that we've heard from you, and then there have been songs that you've written that, for one reason or another, we haven't heard. So, there's like Ryan Adams basement tapes out there?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. It's music is my job, but it's also my hobby.
So when do you know whether a song or even a whole record is something that you want to do professionally or that you want to just consider, oh, this was fun for an afternoon and now let me move on?
When my manager stops yelling at me, I know the record is finished.
So because the reason I ask is because you've begun to revisit some earlier songs now, right?
Yeah, you know, when I did the last record, Ashes and Fire, I went on this tour where I just went out on my own. Mainly I was sort of getting a handle on playing again because I was suffering from Meniere's disease, which is an inner ear disease, and I was quite dizzy all the time and having trouble hearing. So I changed a whole bunch of my life to kind of figure out how to start over. And when I did that, it sort of was one of those life experiences where it didn't feel weird for me to go and look at the music from, you know, the entire time that I'd released records, as well as the things in between. They meant something to me in a new way. You know, a lot of growing up goes into dealing with something that's like as degenerative as that. And I think it gave me a different perspective on what those songs were. Unfortunately, sometimes that perspective was that those songs truly sucked and that people had become nostalgic for them, which was a really interesting thing to sort of go through. Like, really, for instance, I would play Whiskey Town songs, and like, there's this song, 16 Days, that some people really loved. I assume a lot of those people have like an ironic John Deere cap on, but they are like, but they work at like TechServe or something. But anyway, but the thing is, like, 16 days to what? Like, nothing is even happening. Like, I probably was watching, like, The Secret of My Success, and I was just writing down incidental conversation, and I went, hey, I got this new song, because I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. So, but that's fun to revisit for me now. There was a time when I felt embarrassed, and I'm just too old to care now. It's interesting to kind of go and look at that and go, I was doing my best, you know?
All right. And you credit at least part of this to dealing with the Meniere's disease, which you had mentioned last time you were here. I didn't realize it was degenerative. Has it gotten worse, or are you managing it?
I'm managing it. It has not gotten worse. I think I've gotten better, but it happens, and it definitely throws me off my game. You know, it's cool. I overcome it. I do my best. It becomes an almost athletic thing for me to sort of say, wow, this is supposed to take my day out today. It definitely is probably gonna, but I'm gonna do this, this, and this, and I'm gonna see what I can do. And it's just a lot of, for me, it sounds weird, but it was this weird blessing. It was all this soul growth in it. It's not a blessing that I have that, but I feel enlightened to finally sort of go, oh, cool. Like, I don't have the option to walk around like some kind of an entitled brat. Like, I actually have to take care of myself right now. And I think taking care of myself has maybe taught me how to take better care of other people besides Freddie and Daniel.
Who are...
Great job, Daniel.
Who are here in the band today. So tell me about these two very short and possibly old songs that you're going to end with.
So they're not old, but what's interesting is the studio we talked about in the last 3 years, we probably amassed about, I mean, I'm not joking when I say this. It's not like when Robert Smith goes, I demoed 60 songs for Disintegration, which he probably did, by the way, and I want to hear them. No, but all we do is make music. We just go to PacSam and we make music. So there's hundreds of songs. And because I have my own label now, and because it's, I think at some point I worked hard enough at it where I could go and say, look, I'm going to release a 7-inch every month. It's going to have 3 songs on it. And I'm going to sell it to fans. It doesn't have to be a big deal.
Right.
They can exist. And it what's interesting is the material was already there, but it opened up this channel for us to go down and just do stuff that we really want to do. And the very first one was a single I made called 1984 that was a 10-song 7-inch of...
10 songs on a 7-inch?
Yeah, basically...
So they were really short.
Yeah, I mean, but definitely all the information is there. In the spirit of all the stuff that really is at the heart of what I love, like, you know, Husker Du and The Replacements, and, I mean, all the way back to, you know, early hardcore and Minor Threat and SOA and all the bands that I just really, really love. It just felt good to go and do that. It still has my vibe on it,
yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. So Rats in the Wall and Why Did They Leave You Alone? These are the two songs that we'll hear. Neither of them on the new record. These are...
Well, there are on a new record. You can still get it. You can go to iTunes and you can get the digital copy. The vinyl sold out. But, I mean, it was probably frustrating for some people in my life that I released
meaningful
it, like,
glance out the window at management.
No, but like, but... We released it like a week before my record came out. So, like, yeah, that's pretty confusing. But what I had to cause some kind of trouble or it's not me. I had to do something. Seriously.
All right, Ryan Adams, stirring the pot here on Soundcheck today. And here are a couple of additional songs. Let's call them bonus tracks here in the studio. Rats in the Wall and Why Did They Leave You Alone?
To the rays of the burning sun. They will run, can't go home anymore. Rocks in the wall, rocks in the wall. I can hear them crawl. You don't know, you don't understand. Everything to you, it was already planned by men in the sky who chooses what he keeps. Shelter from the bomb, choppers and napalm. Blood on the beach, blood on the hands of all the people who just fell. So guarantee gonna come, step into the rays of the burning sun. They will run, you can't go home anymore. Rats in the wall, rats in the wall, rats in the wall. I can hear them crawl. Rats in the wall, rats in the wall, rats in the wall. I can hear them crawl. I can hear them crawl.
For the first time on the radio, that's Ryan Adams with Why Did They Leave You Alone? And before that, Rats in the Wall. They're short songs. They hit hard. Ryan, thank you very much for playing for us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tomorrow on the show, David Mitchell, the author of Cloud Atlas and the highly anticipated new book, The Bone Clocks, joins us with a Pick 3 playlist. And our How to Be Smarter series continues as we beef up our knowledge about Willie Nelson. Plus, bilingual music from Elado Negro, the stage name of the Brooklyn-based musician Roberto Lang. That does it for the show today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.